It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. We are your public radio station here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 57 degrees under what they're calling mostly cloudy skies. Lots of blue up there, too. Calm winds right now out at the airport. 69% humidity and 10 miles of visibility. They're calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day, with a 30% chance of showers, mainly after 4 p.m. High near 59, east winds to 5. Chance of showers tonight, early on and late, mostly cloudy skies, low of 48 overnight, calm winds. And partly sunny skies again tomorrow, with a 50% chance of showers, mainly after 10 a.m. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak has monkeypox vaccine in town. Democrat Mary Peltola has won the special election to fill the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term in office. And totem pole carvings are getting set to go.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Jackson, Mississippi is heading into a fourth night of a water emergency. Local officials say they've opened 7 locations distributing bottled water, as well as non-drinking water to wash clothes, flush toilets, and bathe. Boil water orders are nothing new for the city, but when a slow-moving storm caused the Pearl River to overflow and flood Jackson, the city's already fragile main water treatment plant failed. Low water pressure and heightened risks for contamination catapulted the predominantly black city of more than 160,000 into an even bigger emergency. Nashambi Lambright, executive director of One Voice Mississippi, blames disputes between state and local officials for delays in much-needed repairs to the water infrastructure.
I think we could have had funding back in January, February, March. But the first thing I remember the governor saying was that crime was the number one priority in Jackson.
Extreme weather conditions likely to become more frequent because of climate change. A heat wave is engulfing the western U.S. 2 major fires are burning in Southern California. KCRW's Megan Jamerson has the latest.
Crews are making progress containing the explosive wildfire in North Los Angeles County that led to the evacuation of an elementary school and residents of 200 homes on Wednesday. But Chief Robert Garcia of the Angeles National Forest warns that the extreme and excessive heat expected to last through Labor Day, coupled with the regional drought, increases the threat of additional fires.
The fire behavior and what you saw yesterday should be a wake-up call to us all about the potential that we're in and we're entering into over the next few days in terms of the fire conditions.
Governor Gavin Newsom declared a state of emergency in California, with temperatures expected to be up to 20 degrees above normal. For NPR News, I'm Megan Jamerson in Los Angeles.
South African environmental activists are celebrating a huge victory after a high court blocked oil company Shell's bid to explore for oil and gas off the Eastern Cape coast. Here's Kate Bartlett.
The Eastern Cape High Court ruled against the exploration rights previously granted to the oil giant to conduct a seismic survey in the pristine Wild Coast, the waters of which are home to humpback whales and other marine life. Last year, the High Court halted the survey after coastal communities and activists took Shell to court. Now the judge has ruled against the exploration rights altogether. Greenpeace program director Melita Steele says the ruling sets an important precedent.
It is proof that the world is moving into an era of social and environmental justice, where the voices of people are put before the profits of toxic fossil fuel companies.
Shell now has the option of going to the Supreme Court. Kate Bartlett, NPR News, Johannesburg.
This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Kodiak Public Health Center now has doses of the monkeypox vaccine, and health officials are encouraging people who might be at risk to get the shot. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports.
Amy Butts is a public health nurse and team lead at the Kodiak Public Health Center. She says the health center received 25 doses of the monkeypox vaccine last week, although they haven't gotten many calls yet for the shot.
Honestly, the demand has not been high. So I've been trying to get the word out. One vial has 5 doses in it. And once you crack that vial, it's only good for 8 hours.
That means that any remaining doses are wasted when she can't use an open vial. Alaska has recorded 3 cases of the virus so far, all in Anchorage, and there have been more than 18,000 confirmed monkeypox cases across the country. Alaska's Department of Health recommends vaccination for close contacts of people with the virus and for men and transgender people who have sex with men and have had multiple or anonymous sexual partners within the past 6 months. Butts says it's important to clarify that monkeypox is not a sexually transmitted infection and anyone can contract the virus.
Monkeypox can spread to anyone through close, personal, skin-to-skin contact. So that could be direct contact with a monkeypox rash, scabs, body fluids from a person with monkeypox.
She says the virus can also spread by touching objects, fabrics, and other surfaces used by someone with monkeypox and through respiratory droplets. Testing is currently available at the Kodiak Public Health Center, but says anyone who thinks they need to be tested or is interested in the vaccine can call for an over-the-phone screening and appointment. The Kodiak Ambulatory Care Clinic is also awaiting monkeypox test kits and vaccines and plans to offer both soon. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Democrat Mary Peltola has won election to the U.S. House to fill the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term in office. Peltola, who beat Republican Sarah Palin by 3 percentage points, will be the first Alaska Native person to serve in Congress. She reacted to the news yesterday afternoon from an office in downtown Anchorage.
I feel like I need to catch my breath for a minute.
The unofficial results of Alaska's first ranked choice election were announced on a live stream from the Division of Elections office in Juneau. Peltola, who represented Bethel in the State House for a decade, was ahead of Palin by almost 9 percentage points when only first choice ballots were counted. She held that lead as second ballots were counted. Republican candidate Nick Begich finished third and was eliminated. Just over half of Begich's voters had marked Palin as their second choice. It was not enough to close the gap. Peltola won with 51.5% of the vote to Palin's 48.5%. At campaign headquarters in Anchorage, Palin said she felt, quote, more fired up than ever.
I feel like, okay, we've only just begun to fight
for Alaska.
I feel like
Amen. This
is just a, you know, the call to arms, you guys.
Almost a third of Begich voters selected Peltola as their second choice. Another 21% of his voters either did not mark a second choice candidate or ranked a write-in candidate second. The vote will be certified on Friday. Peltola will likely be sworn in the week of September 12th, when the House reconvenes after its summer recess. The Speaker of the House could also call a special session just to swear Peltola in early. Peltola will be in office until at least January when the term ends. Meanwhile, she, Palin, and Begich are all campaigning for the next full term, which will be on the November ballot. The Sea Alaska Heritage Institute invited master carvers and their apprentices in Southeast to create 10 totem poles representing Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian cultures. They'll be part of SHI's Totem Pole Trail, which will ultimately include 30 poles and be installed on Juneau's waterfront sometime next year. KRBD's Reagan Miller reports on carvers in the project from Metlakatla and Prince of Wales Island.
The Sea Alaska Heritage Institute sees Juneau as the Northwest Coast art capital of the world, and they hope the Totem Pole Trail will help visitors see it the same way. Sea Alaska's long-term goal is for invited carvers to make a total of 30 poles that will line Juneau's waterfront. Sea Alaska says the first 10 poles are being funded by a $2.9 million grant from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation. All the carvers will be working with apprentices. And Sea Alaska is estimating that the installation will start next year, along with storyboards and plaques for each pole. David R. Boxley in Metlakatla, John Rowan in Klawak, and T.J. Young in Heidelberg are all carving for the trail. Boxley gets excited when he thinks about traditional carvings being the first look of Juneau that tourists get.
I think it's easy for people to forget, and too often Indigenous folks are thought of, for the lack of a better word, and the word that a lot of Westerners use is primitive. We were not. The Northwest Coast was a thriving, ancient civilization here on the Northwest Coast.
The Metlakatla carver is creating a pole representing Tsimshian people. He started carving at the age of 6, guided by his father, David A. Boxley. Since then, he's finished more than 25 poles. Boxley's pole for Juneau will feature the crests of the eagle, raven, wolf, and killer whale moieties.
And they're going to go in order of their origin in our history. So at the top is a killer whale and grizzly bear for the killer whale clan, and then a raven and frog for the raven clan, and a beaver and eagle for the eagle clan, and at the bottom a wolf and crane for the wolf clan.
Klawak's John Rowan is one of three carvers working on the trail from Prince of Wales Island.
It's a pole for the Ishkahitan people. They're out of the Taku River, and it's a raven, frog, and sea lion on the that's being represented on that one.
Rowan credits his father and many POW teachers for sparking his love of carving.
It seems like I've been always been involved in it. My dad used to do it back in the 60s, and that's where I probably got hooked.
T.J. Young is a Haida carver, born and raised in Heidelberg. He's working on two poles for the Juneau project. One will feature a Haida raven crest and the other a Tlingit raven crest.
So I'm doing raven crest on this Tlingit pole, and I'm doing raven crest on a Haida totem pole. And I'm Haida myself, so I'm going to be, and that was kind of a traditional thing. You do the opposite of your clan. You carve the opposite. Eagle would never carve eagles. Ravens would never carve ravens.
Young says he takes a lot of inspiration from his grandfather, whose generation was discouraged from sharing traditional knowledge like carving. He feels lucky he was able to learn.
And it was literally outlawed, the potlatch and the culture and the language. So but they knew that they had to, they had to adapt, they had to change without changing, if that makes any sense.
He says it made his grandfather proud to watch him and his brother carve. His brother Joe Young also is carving a pole for the trail. He says he's looking forward to seeing the differences between all the poles when the project is complete.
It's going to be really interesting to see to notice the differences between styles and colors. And even though it's Tlingit Haida and Tsimshian, I think there's going to be a nice little variety of totem poles to look at and to enjoy. So that's kind of exciting.
Young says he has a December deadline to finish his carving. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Biologists say they're picking up the pace on genetics research to better understand the issue of salmon bycatch, and they hope their findings could be useful to managers making policy decisions about fishing in Alaska's federal waters.
Salmon stocks from up and down the Pacific coast congregate in the Gulf of Alaska and in the Bering Sea to feed. And that's also where trawlers go to harvest millions of pounds of pollock and other groundfish. And those trawlers often accidentally scoop up salmon and other fish in their nets too, a problem known as bycatch. Scientists with NOAA Fisheries want to trace where the bycatch is coming from so they can also understand the impacts of bycatch on specific stocks. That's especially true for salmon stocks in western Alaska, an area of the state that's seeing dismal salmon returns.
100% that's our focus for chum, given its overweighted importance to subsistence fisheries.
Wes Larson is a geneticist with NOAA Fisheries. His team analyzes and sequences the DNA of salmon samples coming off trawler vessels to estimate what portion of the salmon bycatch is coming from where. Geneticists have been using that technology for years. But now Larson says advancements are helping them do that analysis much quicker, which in turn could inform more up-to-date decisions from fisheries managers. Data from NOAA is an important source of information for the North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which manages fishing in Alaska's federal waters. And many of the trawl vessels that scoop up the most bycatch in Alaska are operating in those areas.
The narrative changes so much depending on if you have the genetic data or not, especially for the chum salmon.
The bycatch issue has generated a lot of concern in Alaska, particularly for the small boat fishermen who are impacted by decreased salmon stocks. Last year, the Federal Council took action on halibut bycatch in the Bering Sea, imposing limits on some trawl fleets based on halibut stock abundance. But it passed up a chance to place new rules on trawlers that catch salmon bycatch this summer, instead requesting new analysis from researchers. King salmon stocks are declining sharply across Alaska, as are chum salmon in western Alaska in particular, where the species is an important source of food for subsistence fishermen and their families.
If we use all of our data to understand where western Alaska stocks are, then we can help direct the fleet away from those stocks.
Previously, the program's taken as long as a year and a half to get genetic results back to biologists. Larson says today his team's using updated technology and automated tools to get that information into managers' hands much faster. Still, he says the answer's not as simple as telling one fleet to stop fishing at one time.
There's no easy solution. It's this really complicated problem of, like, fleet dynamics and, like, different boat types and their ability to move. And so there's definitely, you know, options, and that's what we're trying to do. But the question is, unfortunately, really complicated, which is why we're throwing so much data at it, I guess.
There are other factors at play in salmon declines as well. Scientists think one big culprit in some of those population changes is climate change. That was likely the biggest reason for the recent drastic drop in Pacific cod stocks, another species that Larson's team is monitoring. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
A new community event focused on the Arctic is happening in Fairbanks. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, Arctic Fest combines the arts, science, and indigenous perspectives.
Arctic Fest is a production of the Fairbanks Concert Association, the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and the Northern Alaska Environmental Center.
Really sort of a celebration of, you know, this place that we live in, that we know, that we love.
Arctic Fest steering committee member and Fairbanks Concert Association volunteer Ann Biberman says the event is aimed at better understanding the Arctic and the challenge of climate change to inspire action.
We know that UAF is arguably the center of the universe for Arctic science research, but understanding the science behind that change, it's just not enough. You know, we need creative thinking to translate ideas into feelings and feelings into action.
We want people to feel uplifted and empowered and connected to others.
Another Arctic Fest organizer, Mary Beth Lee, a biology professor at UAF, emphasizes the festival's inclusive focus, as highlighted by a community kickoff event tonight at the University Fine Arts Complex.
There'll be an opening of the Native Art Center special exhibit in the UAF Art Gallery. And in the Great Hall, we'll have lots of refreshments, and we'll have live music by Indian Pete and the Band of Fiddlers. They're a Gwich'in fiddling group that sings all in Gwich'in. And then starting at 7, there in the Great Hall, we'll have a panel discussion.
The panel will include different lenses on the Arctic,
science and the arts, and indigenous culture knowledge systems.
Arctic Fest runs through Saturday night with a lengthy and wide-ranging agenda of events, including a green marketplace and innovation hub, a mushroom walk, a puppet parade, a boreal forest stories exhibit, and a Friday night Fairbanks Concert Association 75th anniversary show headlined by the Inuit band Bumyua.
We thought we would start small, but we didn't.
And we're really hoping that people will experience it, take part, and then give us advice as to how to do it better next year.
Lee and Biberman say the long-range goal is to grow participation in Arctic Fest to include people from outside Alaska. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the art of all things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
Your brain wiggles a little with every heartbeat. Yes, your heart and brain are dancing together with every heartbeat. Well, it's more of a wiggle, and it's a very slight wiggle. Barely detectable, but it happens when cerebrospinal fluid gets pumped up the spine. Every second or so, your heartbeat sends blood surging through the vessels of your body. The impact of this can be felt throughout the body in the wrists, the neck, and the ankles. If you're somewhere quiet, you might even hear your own heartbeat as it vibrates in your ears. What you probably won't detect is the subtle pulsing of your brain as blood and spinal fluid ebb and flow inside your skull. Although the brain only moves a tiny amount with every heartbeat, between about 4/10,000ths and 6/1,000ths of an inch, tracking this motion can help reveal potentially deadly problems such as aneurysms or concussions before they become life-threatening. It's detected by a special MRI called amplified MRI that can show the movement better than regular MRIs can. Researchers could use this data on the brain wiggling to help create better helmets or even go as far to potentially spot future aneurysms. Now, researchers can watch the brain bounce and warp as blood moves around the body. Cardiac gating during MRIs is nothing new, but amplified MRIs take what cardiac gating tries to avoid. In strictly layman's terms, cardiac gating is done to prevent a blurred MRI and record the full thing in detail. Regular MRIs are 480p resolution, and amplified MRIs are 4K. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to Thursday. It is the first day of September, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 7:10. It will set again at 9:06. That will give us 13 hours and 56 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 52 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 75 degrees, set in 1930, and our record low was 36, set in 1919. Currently, a pleasant 58 degrees under somewhat overcast skies. Out at the airport, they have 70% humidity, northeast winds to 8 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. Look for a chance of showers this afternoon, but partly sunny skies as well. East winds to 5 miles per hour, high of about 59. A chance of showers tonight, too, at least until 10 p.m., and then again after 4 a.m. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low of about 48, calm winds. And partly sunny skies tomorrow, too, with the same sort of chance of showers throughout the day. Westerly winds to 5 miles per hour, turning to the north tomorrow afternoon. Looking at our local tides, the tide has just turned. It is now headed in. Our next high tide will be at 5:49 p.m. and be 8.7 feet here on the east side. Over on the west side, your high tide will be at 6:17 this evening and be 14 feet in Larsen Bay. Well, let's check on our latest announcement from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 34, date issued 10 a.m. on August 31st. There will be a 120-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 31st, until 6 p.m. Monday, September 5th, in the following areas. In the Outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Saturday, September 3rd, till 6 p.m. Monday, September 5th in the following areas. In the Eastside Kodiak District, except for the Inner Ugak and Outer Ugak Bay sections remain closed, the Outer Iqaluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, and the Cape, Igvac, White Bay, Alinchak Bay, Katmai, and Dakavac Bay sections of the Mainland District. Closed waters are expanded until 6 p.m. Monday, September 5th at Molina Creek to consist of all waters within one-half nautical mile of the beach near the stream terminus of Molina Creek, stream number 251-105, between 58 degrees 10 north latitude and 58 degrees 11 north latitude. As previously announced, the following areas will close to commercial salmon fishing at 6 p.m. Wednesday, August 31st. The Iqaluk Bay section of the Afognak District. Fishermen are reminded that until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak districts, south of a latitude of Cape Kuliuk, King salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fisher information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side. Southwest 20 today will turn to variable 10, seas to 7 feet. For tonight, variable 10, seas coming down to 5 feet. And for tomorrow, variable 10, seas at 4 feet. Coming up to west 20 tomorrow night, seas to 7 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, southwest 20 today, seas to 5 feet, coming down to southwest 15 this evening, and finally becoming variable 10, seas coming down to 3 feet tonight. For tomorrow in the Shelikof, northeast 15, seas to 4 feet. There will be a celebration of life for Margaret Lucine Roberts this Saturday at 3 p.m. at the Afognak Native Corporation Building on Near Island. The family invites all who knew and loved Margaret to come, share a story, and leave your favorite memory in her honor. If you'd like to bring a dish to share, please deliver it to Susan Malutin at the Afognak Building between 1 and 2 p.m. Thank you. This weekend, it's the Kodiak Rodeo and State Fair and the Kodiak 4-H Livestock Auction. It's all happening at the fairgrounds this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Gates open at noon on Saturday and noon on Sunday, and festivities are expected to start sometime afterward. The Kodiak Rodeo is featuring bull riding, barrel racing, shoot dogging, breakaway roping, goat tying, and much more. And at the Kodiak State Fair, if you can make it, build it, grow it, or harvest it, you can enter it at the Kodiak State Fair. They're calling all artists, photographers, 4-H'ers, students, craftsmen, bakers, gardeners, quilters, anybody who'd like to participate in the 2022 Kodiak State Fair and share your talent with the community. It's easy to submit your entries. Just come to the exhibit hall on Thursday between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. and Friday between 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. Again, that's Thursday between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m., Friday between 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. at the exhibit hall. And, of course, the 4-H Livestock Auction is happening September 3rd. That's Saturday. Also at the fairgrounds, registration starts at 11 a.m. if you'd like to bid, and the actual auction begins at noon. The winning bidder is purchasing a live animal, and payment is expected to be made at the auction. But it's an opportunity to support Kodiak youth and fill your freezer with locally sourced quality pork. Again, that's happening on Saturday. Registration starts at 11 a.m. Bidding begins at noon. Things happening at the Kodiak Public Library for tonight, the Chess Club is meeting. That's happening at 3 p.m. Drop in to learn, practice, and sharpen your skills in a cozy, friendly environment. No experience is necessary, and it's open to for all ages. And, of course, the summer reading program ends September 3rd. Be sure to log your reading on Beanstack and turn in your written log before 5 p.m. on September 3rd. But the library is hosting a new reading challenge that starts September 1st and runs through the month of September, focusing on NASA's first Artemis space flight mission. Register for the challenge on Beanstack and read and complete activities for this challenge in September. Visit the library's homepage for more details. And if you have any questions for the librarian, call them up at 486-8686. Fairwind Players is looking for a few imaginative theater directors to direct some short plays and skits in their early November production. If you're new to directing or have some experience but don't want to take on a full play at this time, this is your chance. Contact Mike Wall at gm@kmxt.org sometime before September 6th to find out more or sign up.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.